Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 496. In this episode, Scott talks with Sylvia Richardson, an accessibility coordinator for Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, about non-web-based assisted technologies.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today we're chatting with Sylvia Richardson. She's the accessibility coordinator for Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina and does accessibility as her day job, but we're not going to talk about web-based accessibility, are we?
Note, I wanted to talk a little bit about some really neat developments in non-web-based assistive technology, physical devices that can help people access the world.
You know, in a time when everyone's talking about wearables, it seems like people say wearables, but all they really mean is like a Fitbit. But the real innovation is happening in wearables that are assisting people and people who are differently abled.
That's true. One of my very favorite wearables to talk about, because it's just kind of cool, is a product called OrCam. That's OrCam. It's basically a way to turn yourself into a cyborg. There's a small camera that clips to a pair of eyeglasses, a bone conductive headphone, and then a small computer. And basically, this is just people who have taken existing technologies, small cameras like they use in products like Google Glass, bone conductive headphones, a lot of swimmers use those, or people who want to run in traffic, and then OCR, optical character recognition technology. And basically the camera records the environment around, and then the person wearing it can trigger it, and it will read text to the user. So not just web pages and phone text, but newspapers, signs, menus. You can also program it to do some things like facial recognition. You can program it to help you recognize the products you buy most at the grocery store. And basically then the tiny computer whispers in your ear and reads things to you. And it's a really great tool for building independence so that you can go out and do the sort of things that you need to do to live your life, even if you don't see very well. And you get to be a cyborg. How fun is that?
As a cyborg and someone who's got at least two devices that are medical based attached to me, I am all about augmented technologies like that. I wonder though, do you have to point at the thing you want it to read, or how does it know?
You do have to point. So it's a technology for people who have some residual vision, but most people who are legally blind do have enough vision to be able to recognize text, whether it's upside down or right side up, and point to it to trigger.
Ah, okay. So maybe you're sitting in at a menu and you've got whatever level of vision that you've got. You point at the menu and then it OCRs it in real time and reads it to you.
Yes. And their big innovation is actually OCR on flexible surfaces. So we're really, really good at OCRing flat things and not as good at OCRing things that are bent. So one of the technologies this company has been heavily focused on is working with things that are bent or warped, or for example, the number on a bus, things that are moving. And at least from the demos I've seen, it looks like it's pretty solid.
That sounds amazing. That reminds me of two different things. First, it reminds me of Google Goggles, where you could point it at something and it would say that's an apple.
Yeah, Google Glass, I think.
Not Google Glass, the headphones, but Google Goggles, the object recognition software. I think it's an Android app. You basically take a picture of a painting or a landmark or a popular image, and Goggles would say, oh, you're looking at the Mona Lisa.
It's Yes, it's a similar technology, except it doesn't require internet connectivity. Everything is local and in the onboard computer, both that you don't need internet connection all the time and so that you're not exchanging video of your daily life with a weird server somewhere where there could be security issues.
Yeah, that's a really good, that's a really interesting point that it's that something be entirely self-contained is an important scenario that I wouldn't have thought of. But if you're on the subway, you'd want it to read to you even though you're in a tunnel.
Exactly. Or in your home or walking around. As people like me who are firmly attached to their iPhones know, internet signal is not great everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like from their website, they said that in the future, it'll be able to, you know, tell you the color of your shirt, read outdoor signs and things that you can't necessarily touch, which just sounds pretty amazing as well.
Yes. And the great thing about it is once you have the hardware, it's easy for them to push software updates. So it's a technology you can buy at admittedly a very high price point. I think it's $3,500 or so.
Oh, wow.
That will actually improve over time.
Mm. Have you seen that software that can do real time translation where you do augmented reality? You point at like a Spanish sign and it puts English over the top?
I have seen the YouTube videos of that and it actually looks really kind of fun. Translation is an imprecise science, but it probably will help you with street signs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of expanding that, thinking about all the different kind of Lego pieces one could snap together. That could mean a blind traveler could go somewhere and be in a foreign country and somewhat find their way around. That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about wearables earlier, you mentioned Fitbits.
Mm-hmm.
And other sort of activity trackers. Another technology I wanted to highlight is a smartwatch called Embrace. It has the same basic functionality as a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or any of the other standard activity trackers, but it also has sensors that measure some kind of capacitive skin resistance. I'm not quite clear on the science,
mm-hmm.
that is a useful proxy for detecting oncoming seizures in people with epilepsy. So if you have the right type of epilepsy, the kind that can be measured this way, basically the smartwatch can alert you if you're about to have a seizure. And they have paired smartwatches that can be a parent and a child or a caregiver and an adult, so that if someone is having a seizure, it can alert the caregiver and give them warning to go and help. And that's, again, just a really neat way to take a technology that exists and that is cool and that your kids might actually want to wear, but mm-hmm. also has this bonus medical option.
Stuff like that is so significant. I don't think that unless someone has a problem that is a significant medical problem that would require something like that, it's kind of hard to imagine. But I work on an open source project with a bunch of really smart people called Night Scout, which is a watch that lets you see someone else's blood sugar remotely. And that same idea that like the child is asleep and whether it be epilepsy or diabetes, you know, if like as they say, if Timmy needs you, he needs you right now and you need to be able to manage that situation. And now we can with these kind of technologies.
But it also means that your child has the freedom to walk around and you can feel comforted knowing they're not going to have a seizure when they're in the bathroom, so you don't have to follow them. It's just the same idea as the ORCAM. It's about building independence. And apparently the biofeedback can also be useful for measuring stress levels. For example, for people with an autism spectrum disorder, sometimes it can be helpful to measure stress levels and provide biofeedback so that a caregiver can know when a child who's nonverbal or not good at communicating their needs is feeling stressed and can remove them from the situation before it becomes a bigger problem with a meltdown.
That's a really good point. I think that the biofeedback aspect of these things, that the wearables, the idea that it's giving you a sixth sense, whether it be stress or blood pressure or even the people who use them for heart rate, it gives you insight into what's going on inside your body. And then theoretically, a positive loop happens, doesn't it? That causes you to change your behavior or adjust your behavior to make your life better.
Exactly. It's the same reason that I wear just a regular Fitbit, because I'm not very good at knowing when I'm exercising enough or getting enough sleep. I just don't have that level of self-awareness. But if I have a graph that I share with all my friends and family, I have both the social feedback and the sort of data feedback that lets me change my behaviors and actually go for a walk.
Yeah, definitely. I know that yesterday was my, I think it was my first day back from work, from being on vacation. And suddenly I went from 10,000 plus steps to like 1,000. And at the end of the day, I was like, I don't feel good. And I don't really know why. And then I look at the thing and it says I've gone 1,500 steps today. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to die. So I went out immediately to try to run around and get my steps before the end of the day.
Exactly. That feedback is just really helpful.
Absolutely. And also when I travel, my wife being able to see my blood sugar remotely because I'm diabetic has been hugely important. She's even woken me up in Germany and saying, you're having a low blood sugar and you need to get up and deal with it right now.
Oh, that's really neat. What device is that that's measuring blood sugar?
So I have what's called a Dexcom. It's a Dexcom G4, and it uses RF to talk to a battery that's plugged into my side that's looking at the sugar and the interstitial fluid. Basically, it's a cannula that's stuck to me. It goes RF to the device and then Bluetooth to your phone and then HTTP up to the cloud. And then once it's in the cloud, someone can follow you or subscribe to your blood sugar, get alerts, or put it on their Apple Watch, or with an open source project, put it on a Pebble. And then, and that's the thing, right? Once that data gets out, then people can do whatever they want to with it. They could make a picture frame with an Android tablet and say, look, there's my stress level or my blood sugar, whatever makes them happy.
Exactly. And people think assistive technology is boring. One of the reasons I really love talking about tools like this is it highlights how building things, interesting things that help people doesn't have to be about adding labels to your forms. You should do that. You should add labels. But that's not fun. Just like screen readers are sort of useful workaday technology, but they're like Excel. If you're super into Excel spreadsheets, you will enjoy talking about them. Not so much everyone else. But the conditions are really right, I think, now and in history or in the time we are to really build these kinds of technologies because of a couple of factors. One is the rise of crowdfunding. If you are somebody who's developed a technology that would be useful to people with visual or hearing disabilities, it can be hard to convince a major company to fund you, even though there's a market and you know there's a market. Venture capitalists aren't always on board with this, but with something like Indiegogo or a Kickstarter, you can build these technologies and share them with social media and reach the people that they need to reach who are really passionate about these technologies and have a real need for them. And then you can take advantage of all the technologies and systems we use to build all the things we Kickstarter, rapid prototyping, 3D printing, connections with factories abroad, and build these things and get them to market in a way that just wasn't easily possible 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And it also seems like the objects that we have available to us off the shelf, you know, that I don't have to go and design a wireless secure protocol. I can use Bluetooth LE, or, you know, I don't need to develop a new processor. I can just go to Adafruit and figure out what the right thing for my device is. Means that presumably we can create small, simple things like Embrace started as a Kickstarter, didn't it? The epilepsy watch.
Yeah, I think it was an Indiegogo or something similar.
Mm-hmm. And you don't need to necessarily say, we're going to sell 50 million of these, right? It might be niche, but it's important. And because I can take these pieces off the shelf and prototype them quickly, crowdsource them, and then build them, it lowers the bar and the barrier to entry for new devices.
Exactly. And then it also lets people use those components in innovative ways. Another project that recently got funded on Indiegogo, and I believe it got maybe $1 million in funding, it was very popular, is a device called Airing. So when people think of disabilities, they often think of people who are blind or in a wheelchair, but chronic illness can be a real source of disability, like you were talking about diabetes. Mm-hmm. And one of the most common chronic illnesses in the United States is sleep apnea. And to treat sleep apnea, where basically your soft palate collapses when you're sleeping and you snore really loudly and sometimes stop breathing, which is not great for your health, the current treatment for it are these giant, terrible machines where you wear a huge face mask that makes you look like a Batman villain and it puffs all night. And they're really inconvenient and uncomfortable and keep your sleep partners awake, and no one wears them because mm-hmm. they're terrible. So the people who developed Airing looked at the tiny, tiny fans that are used in microprocessors and thought, I bet we can attach these to someone's nose. Basically, the little tiny fans that we use to cool these cool microprocessors and other tiny devices do produce enough positive pressure that they can be used as a CPAP device. Mm-hmm. And they've developed this tiny disposable little thing. It looks like nose plugs that you would wear when you were swimming. Mm-hmm. And it just goes right up in your nose. And then it provides the positive pressure that people need to keep their soft palate open while they sleep, but without the whole giant, scary Batman villain machine, which means people are more likely to wear them and then actually sleep and be healthier and better at life, really. Sleep is good for you.
Yeah, and it's amazing that little device, if you look at their website at fundairing.com, is really very frankly spoken. The fact goes through like how they built it and how long it lasts and how much it costs. And it doesn't read like a typical medical device because I think that they really are passionate about it, you know? And they're like, yep, you know, it'll cost about $3. And how long will it last? You know, it'll last about 8 hours. It's just, it's very like for us, by us, for lack of a better way of phrasing it.
It is. And I think that's another thing that easy access to social media has given, the ability for people with, chronic illnesses or disabilities to get together and form a voice. So, you know, if I create an iPhone app and it doesn't work with VoiceOver, which is the iPhone screen reader, mm-hmm. people are going to complain. They're going to talk about it on forums. They're going to talk about it on Twitter. They're going to leave iTunes reviews, that are negative and say, this won't work for me. And basically having that community or that voice has made it a lot easier for people to get their needs met.
Hey folks, I wanted to take a moment to tell you about Raygun and their new product called Pulse. Raygun is an error and crash reporting software provider, and their new product, Pulse, it's a real-time user monitoring product. It gives you performance data and user insights. Lets you understand exactly what's happening when users interact with your software, so you're never left guessing. Raygun provides you with the answers to your performance questions, and they've found over 10 billion, that's billion with a B, bugs in customer apps with their crash reporting product, and now Raygun will help you understand application quality like no one else. Over 30,000 developers worldwide can't be wrong. I use Raygun all the time, and I enjoy it very much. You can try it out today with a no-risk 30-day free trial. Start improving your software quality immediately. Try Raygun for free today at raygun.io. People should definitely take a look at this particular fact. I love the way it says, like, is this device FDA approved? And they're like, nope, you know, and here's why. And they go through like, well, you know, maybe we could do that, maybe we couldn't. They explain their different thinking about it. And then at the end, they're like, we'll get there one way or the other, you know, and frank questions like, why isn't it using a rechargeable battery? Which is one of the first things that I was thinking. And they said, well, because it's only $3, if we do use the small zinc batteries, and, it'll, be very, very small and only $3. So, you know, there's a good reason for all of these different, questions, it seems. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Orcam and vision, and, then there was another set of glasses that corrects for color blindness. I'm trying to convince my boss, who is red-green colorblind, to get these.
Well, these are much less expensive than the Orcam. I think they're in the $150 range, so pricey, but affordable. And these were actually the subject of a very, very popular viral video that floated around the internet. You may have seen it. Someone who was red-green colorblind, a friend bought them for him and just said they were sunglasses, and then had him put them on and filmed him seeing colors for the first time, and it was really neat and inspiring. So yes, these are Inchroma is the name of the product. They mm-hmm. are just, they're not electronic in any ways. They're just glasses that use the magic of optics in a way, again, I don't fully understand to yeah. change the way light comes in and enhance colors. So people with normal color vision who put them on just see really awesome bright colors. But people who are colorblind who put them on, or at least who are red-green colorblind, can see red and green because of the way the tones are shifted. And it's really neat. It's useful for things like, reading signs, reading stoplights, reading highlighted code, syntax highlighting for code, you would be shocked how few colorblind-friendly themes there are for Sublime. Believe me, I've looked. But it's also just a way to have an experience that you haven't had before.
Yeah, there's even some testimonials that say that people with normal vision enjoy the level of color saturation that it offers, and that it might, and this is a very underscore italics, might benefit one's mood if you get down during the gray parts of the wintertime. Maybe turning the saturation up would make you happier.
You know, I might try that. I get so sad when it's winter and I go to work and the sun is down and I come home and the sun is down. So
you would probably not do well in Portland because it is crushingly gray from about now until next May.
And that's the reason that I made a commitment to always live north of the 34 latitude line. Or sorry, south of the 34 latitude line. Like anywhere north, it's too dark.
Yep. We're here at the 45th parallel and it's just pretty bad. Yeah. So Nchroma, I understand, was another example of something that wasn't planned. They just kind of stumbled upon it.
Yes. The people who developed it were doing optics research on some other topic, and they made these glasses and they put them on and the colors were super saturated. And then they put them on a colorblind person and all of a sudden, magic. There's a lot of sort of discovery in these things where things that we build for other purposes can be very helpful for people with disabilities or chronic illnesses. And there's another sort of way that that can go where things that are built for people with disabilities or chronic illnesses turn out to be useful to everybody. We call that in the accessibility community the curb cut effect. Curb cuts, so there's tiny ramps cut into sidewalks that allow a wheelchair to get up them. Those are relatively new in the American landscape. Those weren't commonly installed until the Americans with Disabilities Act. But now that they're there, they're really great, right? You can get your wheel luggage up it at the airport. You can get your shopping cart up them if you're taking your shopping cart out of the grocery store parking lot. If you're walking with a small child or a small dog who has trouble jumping the curb, they can walk up them. They turn out to be really useful for everybody. One technological example of that, and I just discovered that this has been, they've decided not to market it in the US because of restrictive driving laws, but it's a device called the Rego. It is a smartphone remote that was initially designed for people who are blind to attach to a white cane or a dog harness, and basically to be able to control their smartphone completely hands-free so that they're not trying to both use a cane and walk down the road on their smartphone, which is very unsafe. And because this device was built for blind people who don't have vision, they did a lot of testing, they did a lot of user work, and they discovered it could be used totally look-free. So that could also be really useful for people who use their phones while they drive, right? A lot of sort of hands-free kits, or, you know, no-look kits actually aren't that good. To make them work with your phone, you really do have to keep looking at your phone. But this device, because it was built for the blind community and tested for the blind community, really can be operated without ever looking at your phone. So unfortunately, the company has decided not to market it for drivers because of various legal considerations, but I still think it's a good idea if you're going to use your cell phone anyway while you drive.
Yeah, you know, I've actually tried, and it's probably not good to admit this, but I've tried using VoiceOver on an iPhone to talk to my phone. I use Siri while I'm driving. When you plug Siri in, you can then use the Hey Siri feature. And a lot of people don't realize that Siri can then switch applications. You can say, Hey Siri, go to Maps. Hey Siri, go to Mail. You can say, read this if you're on a page, or read this mail, or read my texts. I think that we, as sighted people, could learn a lot from the way that people interact with their, blind people interact with their machines. Because I feel like we've got like Cortana and Siri that we can ask individual questions to, but that's as far as the interaction really goes. We're not having long conversations like Star Trek level, chats with our computer about real problems.
But you can. because I do accessibility testing for my day job and I'm very familiar with VoiceOver, I actually do use it very heavily for a sighted user. And my favorite use case is I'll turn on VoiceOver, have my headphones on and turn off the screen when I'm on a subway or a bus and in a crowded area. And then I can interact with my phone, but no one can read over my shoulder. It's awesome.
How long did that take you to figure out? How much time would you spend in VoiceOver in order to develop that superpower?
It depends. If you're willing to just turn off your screen and flail, you'll learn pretty quickly. If you prefer the less drowning method, Apple actually has a pretty good VoiceOver tutorial that will pop up automatically when you turn on VoiceOver. But if you can print out a cheat sheet and look at it, which is obviously cheating because I'm sighted and I can do that, the gestures are fairly intuitive and easy to pick up. VoiceOver on an iOS device is a lot easier to use than a keyboard-based screen reader, just because gestures are a little bit easier to get your head around than the 75,000 keyboard combinations you need to make a desktop screen reader work well. So I'd say...
Yeah, it really is surprisingly, it's surprisingly usable, I think, for a black slate that you can only touch. You would not expect an iPhone to be a blind-friendly device, but it really is very, very good.
It is very good, and I'm slightly prejudiced in favor of it. I think that the VoiceOver screen reader is a lot better than the screen reader that's built into Android devices, although the Android one is improving. And that is the reason why I own an iPhone, even though I don't have any other Apple devices, and I'm otherwise a Windows user and a sort of natural audience for the Android, because I use the screen reader, and because the Apple one is so much better, I've stuck with an iOS phone.
Interesting. Well, now you're going to make me rediscover VoiceOver and spend more time trying that. And I think that anyone who's interested in assistive technologies who is able-bodied or not disabled in the way that would require you to use a certain feature should try those features. If you are sighted, try using a machine, whether it be a phone or a computer, without the thing that you're used to. Like, turn off the monitor. Just use your headphones. Explore these different things, even though you have all your faculties.
It's a great use. Another great assistive technology feature that's built into iOS devices and possibly in Androids as well is I keep my phone on vibrate pretty much all of the time. And in the iOS accessibility settings, you can set custom vibration patterns to be used as ringtones and text notifications. So I can, I also know Morse code, so I basically set up custom notifications for the people who call or text me most where it taps out in Morse code, their name, and then I can have my phone in my pocket and I could know if the person calling me is my fiance and I should really answer or if it's a stranger and I don't even bother have to fish it out.
That is cool. So you have made the custom tap for a person, the custom vibration for a person be the Morse code of like a couple of their initials or something.
Exactly. If you don't know Morse code, which is okay, then you can use any custom tapping pattern that makes sense to you.
I have to just pause for a second because I think that the audience should pause as well to just give you the nerd slow clap of the week because that is awesome. Seriously.
Like, I know.
You know it's awesome. That's a really cool life hack. I like that. I need to learn Morse code now to make that more feasible for me though.
One of my very favorite sort of party tricks is to talk to people about their frustrations with technology and then tell them how they could be using the accessibility features they didn't know existed in their device to make their device better. I don't know if it's as fun for other people as it is for me, but I really enjoy it.
Here's a possible plug for a product that I work on, a little startup that a couple of people have used in an accessibility context because you're a Windows user and an iPhone user. My buddy Greg and I wrote an application called My Echo that basically takes the dictation from Siri, which is excellent, especially if you're dictating an entire like paragraph, and brings it into Windows. So if you're sitting in Word or Excel or Outlook or Gmail, you can talk on your iPhone. It goes up to the cloud and then back and then pastes into whatever you're doing. And this has been huge for accessibility, even though that's not who we designed it for.
That is. Dragon, naturally speaking, is the most common program used for that, but it's an expensive program. Exactly. The licenses cost a few hundred dollars. So being able to have a hack like that is really useful. I have access to Dragon because my employer bought it for me, but.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Being able to do this for $2 or $3, but also if you use Siri on a regular basis, being able to choose. And that gets to the larger point that you were making earlier about how we can plug all these things together. Like we don't have to wait for a big corporation to do it. We can say, oh, I like that service and I like this here and I'm going to make my own hack.
Exactly. And there's a big wide world of people out there who will help you test, who are very excited about technology that helps them build the world. So if you are working on an app and you're looking for blind users to test to see if it works with VoiceOver, go on mm-hmm. Twitter and ask. There's so many people who are so enthusiastic about helping you out with testing, with code, with all these things, because these technologies help widen their world.
Absolutely. And I've even found that Twitter is kind of a great equalizer as well. You know, I've talked to lots of people on Twitter, and there's always someone out there who either is interested in the topic that you're interested in or has the disability or the disease or the condition that you're interested in. And then you can connect with that community and move the ball forward.
Exactly. And you will not find a more enthusiastic group of Twitter evangelists out there than the disability community. If they find something that works, especially if you as a developer or an open source leader are willing to put in the effort, then they will tell absolutely everybody they know.
Very cool. Well, I think that you definitely sold me on the idea that accessible design is fun. You know, it's not a boring obligation.
Except maybe for form labels. I will admit those are probably not as fun as I think they are.
I'll give you that. Putting alt text on your pictures always sucks, but we do it because we should. But the devices that one can create and access right now to make life easier are pretty amazing. It'll be fun to follow up in a year or two and see what else is going on in the space of non-web assistive technologies.
I will reach back out to you when I find something really cool.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Sylvia Richardson, for chatting with me today.
All right, and thank you for having me as a guest.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.